Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Thundercat Technology. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
The advent of 5G, more powerful cloud and edge computing, and more capable sensors have given new life to the Internet of Things idea. One domain where that's especially true, buildings maintenance and operations. I discussed this in detail with the director of the Buildings Technology Services Division at the General Services Administration's Office of IT, Sandy Sodchair.
My division, we provide IT project management support for our customer, the public building services, and specifically within PBS, the Office of Facilities Management and Office of Design and Construction. We provide support when they're either integrating their various building systems, which we're going to get into more, to the GSA network on our backbone. So whether it's they're migrating their system, they're upgrading it, or in case of our design and construction, if there's a whole new construction and then they're building it and they want to have building automation components, so it's going to be a brand new build out. So we're in this shop that we try to coordinate the different activities from when they want to start the project until they actually integrate it to the network.
And what is going on these days with respect to building systems? Because my understanding is that there's far more integration of systems because they can talk to one another and so forth. What are the IT trends here? How is it changing from buildings of the 50s where, you know, the lights were on one circuit and the heat's on another circuit and so on?
Yeah, so there's been a huge surge in the past 10 years or so, or 12 years that I've been with GSA, that systems are getting connected to the network. So there's a lot of either for, in our case, presidential mandates to integrate buildings, to get more data, to have more energy efficiency. So there's a lot of trend to migrate the systems to the network. And, you know, there's a lot of IP-enabled devices. And with that, obviously, with the connectivity, with all those benefits that you get from connectivity, there comes the risk. And what is happening these days, back to your question, is Cyber. So there's a lot of cybersecurity risk that is associated with that.
And that is because the information on the various systems and components of the systems are on an IP network that is internet connected.
It is, yes, because, you know, as you were saying back then, when things were, you know, what we call in the standalone mode, when they're not connected, obviously that's the least amount of risk because nobody can do anything. Nobody can see anything. So building systems were traditionally built to be installed and last for 20 years. And, you know, you would just walk away and it would run the building and everything was great. But as things got connected, as these building system components became IT systems, everything changed. Because for one thing, the building system industry is not traditionally built to be an IT system. So they were still building it so that they can last for 20 years. But once it gets connected, it's an IT system. So yes, there's definitely a lot of risk now associated with having that connectivity.
And why is it becoming an IT system? What is the benefit or the benefits of this approach?
Well, the benefits is that, you know, there's with collecting the data, where once you just put in a network, there's the benefit of having remote visibility to it. You don't have to have folks running around the building with a wrench and, you know, being reactive when something breaks down. Once you have the systems connected, interconnected, and they communicate with each other, then, you know, you can actually have a dashboard that you can have in an entire building in a nice console that you're looking at, and you can start doing predictive analysis so that you're not just waiting until system breaks down. You can actually have a way of system sending you, you know, notification. This thing is doesn't sound like this. This piece of equipment is not working quite right, and so it doesn't seem right. And that allows you to have preventative maintenance, and that, you know, saves costs. So other than needing less people to walk around the building, so you have operational efficiency, you can have energy efficiency, the data collection, then you don't have to replace a piece of equipment. If you do the maintenance on it, you can probably let that device or system last for many more years.
All right. And then who becomes the, I guess, owner or arbitrator, or who does the data all belong to? And how does that change the management of buildings day to day?
That's a great question, because for the longest time, this was just an IT problem, or it was the security person's problem. You know, if something gets hacked or something gets compromised, then, well, IT, you know, it's your problem. And the great thing about GSA is that very soon we, you know, collectively agreed that this is not just one person's problem. It's not just my division's problem. It's not just our CISO's problem. It's not just our CIO's problem. It is both a shared responsibility between PBS and IT, not only just one person from each, that every single person from the O&M to the building operation maintenance person, to the building manager, to the service center director, all of us have a piece in this, and it's just not one thing that you can do at a given time. Cybersecurity, cyber vigilance is a constant thing that you'll have to always be aware of it. Every activity that you do, that is something that at the same time that you're conscious of, that you take into consideration, because really, no matter what you do, you're not safe.
Sure. And do you consider the cyber dangers, people obtaining the data about the operations, and then maybe being able to predict when people are at work and when they're not at work? Or is it actually that they could disrupt operations by hacking into a building network and shutting off the lights or something?
Yeah, it's actually both. So with, you know, in critical buildings, obviously buildings that, you know, house are some of our more sensitive agencies, that can absolutely be a concern that somebody from outside can notice trends that, oh, you know, something, you know, is going on over the weekend, you know, so these are some that's definitely a concern. So, you know, additional vigilance with that. To make sure that our data is protected so that outsiders can't necessarily just see those kind of trends. But yes, another one is that there can be a disruption of operations. There could be a very sensitive court proceeding going on, and somebody can turn the lights on and off, and that can disrupt. Or it can make a building very hot in the middle of July in Arizona or in Texas, that can make it unbearable to be in the building, or incredibly cold, and you know, the pipes can burst, so it can have so many things, so many scenarios that can happen. Absolutely.
And this integration, what other outcomes do you seek from it? For example, one of the top priorities of really administration after administration has been the reduction in energy consumption for federal buildings. Is this
absolutely
something that can be served? How can that help?
But energy efficiency has been a constant requirement from all of our administrations, and especially with this one right now, sustainability is a huge driver.
And how does this type of networking of systems in the building and the data produced serve that end, that energy reduction end?
Well, by collecting the data. You know, you can analyze the data, and, you know, for one thing, that, you know, by having, for example, sensors in a building, occupancy sensor, you can notice about how people are congested, how the traffic in the building, and that way you can turn certain parts of the building, like right now it's very warm, you can turn off the HVAC or the AC, sorry, in the building, you can turn it off in a certain part of the building. So that way the whole building is not full on trying to cool the entire building. So by noticing that kind of trend, and by looking at how people are sitting and occupying space, you can definitely drive energy. Or by even showing, having kiosks in building, that when tenants and when visitors come in the building, they look at and they kind of get to see how much energy is being utilized in the building. And people, by seeing those data, they can also be more conscious of, oh, if, you know, when I'm leaving, I should turn off the lights. Or, you know, even, you know, in some of our older buildings that still may have window units, that you're aware of it, I'm the last person leaving, I should go off and, you know, start turning off. I mean, I used to do that back when we were in the office, is that last person to leave, make sure you're turning off the lights and you're turning off anything that's on. I mean, these kind of things, every little bit helps.
So it can be automated to some extent. now?
Oh, absolutely. If they can be automated. For those that we're recalling smart buildings, is that you try to automate that so that it can show trend that this time, like Wednesday afternoons or Wednesday seems to be a day that everybody's in the office. So that way you can adjust your temperature or your occupancy accordingly, or Mondays and Fridays, most people work from home. So that way, you know, you can close off certain sections of the building, and then people, you know, you can make a lot of decisions based on the data that you're collecting from these smart building systems.
And before we get into some of the details of the technology and the networks and the sensors here, I just wanted to ask you to maybe talk a little bit more about predictive analytics, how that comes into play here and what that can do. What are some of the outcomes those can produce for you?
Yes, actually, I can speak more about our GSA Link program, which is a national application. Now it's been in place for about 10 years. And it's one of our flagship programs, and it's a fault detection and diagnostics, and it monitors and tracks operations so that facility managers can look at irregularities and what we call faults, and they can investigate those and make corrections based on that. And that way, you know, you can reduce cost of energy, you can reduce the cost of operations, and like I alluded to, like the cost of like equipment that can be faulty, you can look into it instead of having to replace an entire chiller. You can go and do some maintenance on it and get it fixed.
So that implies that the up-to-date equipment then can tell the network about itself.
Yes, absolutely, it can. And the network, the equipment, you know, yes, as long as the equipment is not faulty and you're getting it corrected, yes, it can give you a lot of information and get it corrected.
Sandy Sodchair, Director of the Buildings Technology Services Division at the General Services Administration's Office of IT. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
IoT solutions are reshaping government entities to provide better services, greater safety, efficient transit, and smarter public infrastructures. Thundercat Technology, in partnership with Dell and Ruckus, provide unified networks to streamline all access points and are bringing Internet of Things into one singular network. Thundercat, Dell, and Ruckus can offer this unified solution to government agencies at an enterprise scale. Learn about our IoT experience and capabilities at thundercattech.com/delltech. Innovate, grow, know. Thundercat, Dell, and Ruckus.
Welcome back to our interview with Sandy Sodchair, Director of the Buildings Technology Services Division at the General Services Administration's Office of IT. We're discussing the Internet of Things for better operation and maintenance of buildings. And let's talk about sensors, because, I mean, a thermostat is a sensor, and there are sensors that can tell whether lights are on. But you mentioned the fact that is a room occupied or are people coming and going. That's beyond the capability of a light sensor or a temperature sensor. Tell us more about what some of the, I guess you could call it, Internet of Things sensors look like in this new modern age of predictive analytics and automation of buildings.
Yeah, so particularly when it comes to sensors, there are two types of sensors that we are interested in and have been deploying, is either occupancy sensors, of which we just mentioned, and the other one is environmental sensors. So back to the occupancy sensors, there's so many different things you can do. One, you know, the COVID was a game changer, obviously, because we went from, you know, before wanting to know how our buildings are being occupied, and, you know, even for our tenants, you know, we lease space to other agencies. So, you know, if the Social Security Administration has three floors in the building, and you know, we would be able to use sensors. The plan was we would use sensors, and like, well, it looks like you're really mostly occupying two floors. But with COVID, that kind of changed a little bit, because we wanted to be a little less congested. But one of the use cases for having occupancy sensors is that you can put thresholds that, for example, in a conference room, because we want to do social distancing, that you don't want to have any more than 10 people in this conference room, so that the occupancy sensor would have a threshold and it would say, all right, now, you know, you've reached the 11th person would walk in that you've hit max and somebody needs to leave. So that's one of the definitely use cases. You know, as I mentioned, the one about knowing how space is being utilized, you know, the congestion throughout the building. We're able to look at our building and like, for example, our headquarters at Central Office in 1800 F in Washington, D.C., we can look at, it looks like the infill or the fourth wing seems to be the most occupied and the first wing doesn't seem to be. So that way you can make decisions that, you know, IT sits on the sixth floor. So it looks like IT is mostly sitting in the building, you know, mostly occupied on Wednesdays, whereas PBS facilities management that is sitting on the third floor, it looks like they're occupying it mostly on Tuesday, you know, that you can kind of see trends like that and make a lot of decisions according to that.
Is an occupancy sensor a camera? How does it know? What kind of a device is it that can tell how many people are in a room or who's in what room?
It can be cameras. There's different ways that can do that. But, you know, for example, when you go to the mall and you go parking and you see those little bulbs on and you can see that there's a park spot that it's on and on, that's not necessarily a camera that is doing it. It's sensing that somebody's there. So there's different ways. There's definitely cameras, but with cameras, we're more concerned about, you know, people's faces. We don't want to necessarily do that given that they're government buildings. So people can be tracked by their devices, for example, that is just not that this is Sandy walking in the building, but that there's a device associated with the person. Then there's like trip wires, like the actual that we put at an entrance and an exit. So it shows that this person walked in and then this person walked out. So that way it can show that right now in this given time, 10 people are in this corridor and then an 11th person walked out.
And do these communicate over IP? Are they Wi-Fi
yes.
connected? How are they powered, for example?
Again, there are different ones. There are ones that are Bluetooth. There are ones that communicate via IP. So different types of sensors out there. We're still have done a lot of we've done a few different pilots to see what works better for us. And, you know, we have buildings in all shapes and sizes and colors. So we have to probably try different types of things for different types of buildings that we have.
Sure. Do you use power over Ethernet? Is that one of the methodologies
yes,
to make sure they operate?
PoE is definitely one of the use cases. Absolutely.
And what about the environmental sensors separate from the occupancy sensors? Those seem to be proliferating in many different forms and formats also.
Yes. So again, another one with COVID that was a bit of a game changer. And we are, as we speak, working on you know, issuing a procurement, hopefully in the next few months. So it can actually detect how many of the particles in the air, carbon monoxide. I mean, there are different types of stuff that can be sensed through these things. So that way you can evaluate the health and safety of the environment. We have some older buildings, so that even becomes more important for doing that, to be able to sense the, you know, the environment and the different types of environmental measures that can be monitored that way.
And I've heard that in some federal buildings and other buildings, that sunlight and the sun direction and whether sun is coming in the window can actually actuate shades or open shades and closed shades. Is that's not science fiction?
No, it's not actually. Well, if you're sitting in a conference room, sometimes if you're not used to it, so we have that in our headquarters, is that as you're sitting and depending on the sunlight, the shades are sensed. So that way, when the sun comes really high, the shades kind of start going down. So if you're not paying attention, you can be caught off guard. But yeah, that helps. So during the day, we can harness that energy and be able to, you know, that way we can have natural sunlight in the building. And then as it gets really high and it kind of gets hot, then the sensors kind of detect that and the shades kind of slowly come down. And in fact, one new thing that additional things that we are doing is, you know, with the solar films that can be put on windows. And those harness energy, and they can, you know, you can use that to power lights. And again, another sustainability factor is that you're not relying on the grid, that you can harness energy and be able to power lights and other things in the building.
So the sensors and the networks then not only cause effects in the immediate, such as warning that this building is full or this conference room is full or this shade needs to be opened or this place needs to have air conditioning now that there are people in there, but it also produces data that is collected. And what are some of the applications? How does that data get used post facto? And I imagine the more you collect over time, the more useful it is.
Yes, data is definitely something that we are really working on because, you know, there's a mad rush with Internet of Things, you know, get data. But then the rub is to be able to effectively use that data to be able to analyze it, to be able to normalize it. I mean, there's so many different ways of doing it. Just because you're collecting it doesn't mean they all will just talk with each other. So yes, there's a definitely the use cases that we can have, as I mentioned, you know, to either be able to, you know, sense where people are. So that way you can make decisions based on how we lease space to other agencies, how much space is needed. And that can also help for us to determine in the future our space needs that we can do, that we can help our customers for them to make informed decisions about their space needs, so to speak.
In new construction, what besides the electrical wiring and the plumbing has to be in place in order to make sure you can enable
yes.
all this?
So when we have a new construction, this is one of the reasons why we want to work very closely with our Office of Design and Construction. It's that we don't want the infrastructure that is putting in place, the IT backbone, the cabling, the wiring that is being put in place to be an afterthought. It's a lot easier to put it in place or to build it correctly as you're building the building instead of going back and retroactively try to fit it. We've been in that scenario many times, and it's a lot more costly, a lot more time consuming to basically to fit a square peg in a round hole. So we work very closely when we are doing a network. We have network risers that we work closely with our business line to build. We want to see how the cabling is done, you know, about the cabling attenuation limits, you know, about copper versus fiber. And then we want to have all of our IT equipment stacked so that way we don't need to have so many network switches in a building. We want to be able to, you know, have maybe every two or three floors have a closet that has IT equipment. So again, reducing the footprint for IT. And then another one is that the reason why we want to have them stack and be able to have them home run to the core switch, so to speak, in the building is that we want to avoid having a single point of failure so that if a network switch on the third floor dies, you know, and network equipment go bad all the time for various reasons. So if the network switch on the third floor dies, then it doesn't have a ripple effect on the second floor and on the first floor. So that way it's just that one switch and maybe all the devices that are connected to that particular switch on the third floor, and you know, overnight that switch and you get it fixed. But in another scenario, if they were not stacked and they were not home run back to the core switch, then you can have three floors down as a result of that. So having that proper infrastructure in place and working with IT to build that is very important.
Sandy Sodchair, Director of the Buildings Technology Services Division at the General Services Administration's Office of IT. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Thundercat Technology on Federal News Network.